Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is David Murphy, your host. Welcome to the Monday night Unity broadcast. We have a couple of guests that's going to be with us this evening, one by the name of Mr. Daniel White. And he's a former NFL football player, and he got a lot of good things that's coming up. And we have a brother, Cliff, will be coming on, who has some ideas that will benefit us all. And I see a good friend of mine is on the call. I haven't talked to in a while, Dr. Pender. How you doing, sir? And hopefully he got something. Well, he always has some good news to share. And we also, I see, with Mr. Walter Dempsey Murphy, out of Petersburg, Virginia. And, of course, we have Vernon Underwood, one of our soldiers, and my co-host, Brother Satawi Jahi. And before I bring Brother Satawi Jahi on, matter of fact, I'm going to bring him on first, and then I'll get into our discussion. Brother Satawi, you got it, sir.
All right. Thank you, David. As we do each and every week, we open up this podcast. We do a reading from Daily Motivations for African-American Success, written by Mr. Dennis Kimbrough, the author of Think and Grow Rich, A Black Choice. And, you know, it is our choice to think and grow rich. And our reading for today goes like this. Your cup runneth over. Success is when your cup runneth over and your saucer too. Nathaniel Browner, Sr., entrepreneur. Imagine yourself standing before an abundant waterfall. What would limit you from taking your wealth of water from the waterfall? The size of your container, right? If you had a cup, you'd have a cup worth of water. If you had a gallon jug, you'd have a gallon's worth of water. If you had a barrel, you'd have a barrel's worth of water. If you had a tanker truck, you could supply water, or in this case, wealth, to all of your friends and family. What if the same were true of all of the attributes of wealth? What if your ability to experience peace of mind, health, happiness, abundance, prosperity, love, and opportunity were limited only by your ability to receive? What if each of these qualities were available to you in infinite supply, and the only thing that limited you was the size of your container? Yet most of us don't think that way. We believe that if we have a cup, only a cup's worth of water, where it dribbles over the waterfall. This is an illusion, a highly convincing illusion, but an illusion just the same. If we wanted to expand our ability to experience peace of mind, health, happiness, abundance, prosperity, love, and opportunity, we must expand the size of our mind first. You create your container by seeing yourself already in possession of what you want. You enlarge the container by stating positively and affirmingly, I am healthy, I am prosperous, I am happy. As the container is enlarged, you will inherit the wealth of your life. Today I will dig my well before I am thirsty. I will affirm what I want. Yes, you know, we need to think about the size of the containers that we want to fill and the people that we can serve. And just as Mr. David Murphy did this past weekend, I wasn't there, but I'm pretty sure the event turned out well. And, you know, he helped expand people's mind and help them be able to think about prosperity and all the people that they can bless through coming together. So with that said, I'm going to turn it back over to Mr. Murphy. David, you there?
I was running my mouth and didn't even hit myself. In any case,
okay.
I was just saying that, yes, my cup is running over in so many different ways. The event was successful. We had quite a few people who showed up, came out to support us. And the ones who couldn't make it, normally when you give events, you have a ratio of something like you send out 100 invitations, you may get 20, 30 or something. But we, I would say, you know, say out of the rate we send, I think we have about 80% participation. And so, you know, it's extremely good. And one of the reasons why is because the people that was invited was the type of people that served. And the whole event was about honoring those that served. And they showed up. I seen a couple of my mentors, some of my comrades I came up in the ranks with. I seen some new folks that's been out there for some time putting in work. And we also had some of our millenniums there, up-and-coming soldiers, you know, putting in some great work. And one of the purposes was to bring all generations together. And we achieved that. But we also wanted to let them know why they was there, why they were fighting, why I chose to honor them. You see, because of I see one of us on the call, Brother Rico was on the call. He's one of the originators of this concept of giving. And it started around in January, and they selected a gentleman by the name of Leon Purnell. And Leon Purnell runs a center called Men's and Family Center, where he helped men who had coming out of prison and family, with, you know, all types of crises and things like that. Help with expungements, all kinds of good stuff. And been operating for over 20-something years. And so well, they chose him, and myself, several other people, organizations, individuals donated money to him. And we raised over $11,000 for the brother. Now, he needs a lot more because he's trying to rebuild the center. But on top of the monetary blessing that he received, he also received a lot of recognition for the good works that he done. And the exposure sometimes is worthless. I mean, not worthless. I mean, priceless. Because you can't get that kind of PR work, you know, just for, you know, doing, you know, just for being, you know, putting in good work. But people like Rico were constantly sharing information about, even I was doing it. Like I said, was putting out information about the brother, and the concert, like I said, was extremely successful. But I was recently been hospitalized and had a lot of health issues lately. But when I came home from the hospital, and the fundraiser that they had for the other brother was over with, and so they say they're gonna select four organizations a year, this year anyway, to test them. Market up, see how things go. And just so happens that I was the recipient for the next fundraiser. And thus far, it's been very good. I mean, extremely good. A lot of people donated to me. I received more exposure than I can ever recall. I see my name plastered all over the place now, you know, because of this concept. And not only that, it's helping me financially, but deeper than that, it helped me spiritually. It helped me mentally, socially, in all kinds of ways, because, you know, it is often, that's why they start to thought of this concept. See, it's often people like me, most likely people like yourselves who's on here, those of us who are serving, those of us who have put in and work and continue to do so, like Dr. Pinder on here. And it's very seldom that we ever get thanks or recognition or awards or anything like that. You know, we don't even very seldom get a pat on the back or thank you. But yet we move forward because we don't do publicity things that we do for those, you know, to be in the spotlight or to be patted on the back, anything like that. But, you know, by human, we are human. And it's always, always human nature. We like to be not only respected, we like to be recognized, and we like to be appreciated. And that's just human nature. And I personally was not accustomed to this type of attention. And not only the attention that I received, but the monetary rewards that I received, you know, I'm used to giving, but not, you know, used to on the receiving end. And it's ministry. It really opened my eyes and taught me some things. It taught me not only, you know, of course I'm a giver, but if you're going to be a giver, you have to learn how to receive as well, to accept the blessings as well. And so I can honestly say that this has been one of the, this last, it's been like a roller coaster ride. Like I said, in the last 4 years, I had a stroke, COVID, heart surgery, all kinds of things that happened. You know, lost family members, all kinds of things. Been a roller coaster year. But then the COVID situation, everything, you know, been a rough all over. Now, everybody's been going through some rough stuff. But there was a glass ceiling and icing on the cake, as we say sometimes. Because, like I shared with people, this is for the first time in my life I feel so appreciated. I feel recognized and a lot of other personal things I don't want to go into too much. But Tirico, Bill, Beverly, Vernon, the organizers of this great concept, I greatly appreciate you. And because they gave to me and blessed me, because they say I've been put in it, and which is true, I have been out there for 30, 40, closely to 50 years working for us as a people, us black people, melanated people. And, but I do know, see what I do, you know, they put the spotlight on me. And so I decided to put the spotlight on other people who've been working in the vineyard as well. So I hosted an event this past Saturday called It Takes a Village. And I invited personally people that I know personally here local in Baltimore who has been putting in work out there for years. And like I said, a couple of them was my mentors. But the many people that I could find, I couldn't find everybody. I couldn't contact everybody. But still, I had close to 60 representatives there of people who put in work at the social club past Saturday. And they all had the opportunity to share who they are and what they were doing. And it was like a reunion day. I haven't seen some of the people in years, and it was also my first time of actually being out in the public for over a year. And so it was all kinds of great things that happened that evening. I received a lot of love. I received some cash too. I ain't gonna lie, you know, it was nice. And I got to reconnect with a lot of good, hardworking people. And all this came from this concept that they created. And after me, you know, as of June the 20th, they will be selecting someone else because my time period will be up. And I will be working just as hard for the next recipient and the recipient after them as well. Because, see, this is the way this thing works. They select an individual or an organization that's in the community that has a proven track record of putting in work, helping our community, doing things for our community. Those are the type of people that they select. And what they do, we raise donations. We ask people in the community to support these individuals. We share their story. We, you know, highlight them all over town. You know, we get some of the people that's already has given to give to them as well. And they're going to get a lot of exposure, especially from me. And they're going to get recognition for the great work that they've been doing over the years. And can you imagine, let's just do the math here. Now, we did 4 years now, four organizations, and two organizations are already, you know, powerful organizations, not because I belong to one of them, but the National Black Unity Network is a powerful organization. It blesses a lot of people. And just as an example, just this past Saturday, because they spotlight me, I spotlighted because of them. I spotlighted over 60-some other people who had put in work. And to see how that's what we call reciprocal. And so, you know, blessings continue to strong. Now, can you imagine an organization out there blessing people with nothing, with no help at all from other people? Can you imagine what they can do with a little help? And most of us know that those of us who are workers, who are servants, know if we just had a little bit extra help, we can make do wonders with it, because we do wonders with nothing. And so, again, I want to, you know, highlight and spotlight and say thankful, and I'm extremely grateful for the blessing that I've been receiving. And also, to those who are supported, like Brother Vernon, I mean, this brother, he did the recording, and we had Facebook Live yesterday. It was on Zoom. You can go to Vernon Streeter page. You can actually see the entire event. He recorded the whole thing and plus did personal interviews with people. And Rico Crowley was there, full support. Bill Gooden and Beverly was there as well. And I want to, you know, say kudos to all of them. Brother Cliff, who should be coming on shortly, one of our guest speakers this evening, did the DJ and brought all his own personal equipment to the place and set it up. So a lot of people pitched in. See, this is what's happening. See, this is unity in action. And all of these things that I received just from, you know, this concept, but there was another concept as well that I seen for the first time. And that's the National Black Unity News, not the paper itself, but the people behind the paper, the people who support the paper, the people who actually contribute articles and things like that. You know, like I said, I've been sick for the first time in my life as well. I've had a lot of firsts lately that I actually seen a glimpse of unity. I've seen because of the people that's worked with the public, how they support one another, and definitely how they supported me during some of my roughest times. And so I want to give kudos and a shout out to them as well. Because now I feel like Martin Luther King, when he mentioned I went to the mountaintop. Well, it seemed like I have too now. You know, I'm being appreciated. I'm being supported. The people in the newspaper is helping us out in a great way. And so, you know, it's all good. And so now we have an army behind us, and we're going to move forward. And, you know, the National Black Unity News is going to continue to put out great information. We're still going to serve our communities. But we got a speaking of our newspaper, we have a gentleman. We have two gentlemen on there. I also see Mr. Michael Thomas. You know, he was supposed to come on a couple of weeks ago and share some information about some of the things that he does. And maybe he can share just a little bit this evening, but about some of the things that he does in North Carolina. And Mr. White, are you available?
Yes. Yes, I am.
Sir. Okay. Now we have Mr. Daniel White with us. He's a new contributor. Janetta, editor with the National Black Unity News. This brother has a unique story about, you know, being a professional athlete, what's so unique about it, you know, he played several years in the NFL, but he got injured and had a lot of after effects from, you know, being a professional, you know, because you get hit and you go through a lot of torture mentally and everything else. We recently just heard of young tennis star, Osaki, I think her name is, something like that. But, you know, she had a little incident. You know, she dropped out the tennis thing that she was supposed to be involved with, and they fined her and things like that. And then it opened up a great discussion about how our athletes are being treated. And now, I don't know about anybody else, but I do know, you know, they don't open up a lot of doors for us. We have to open the doors ourselves. But when the doors are open, especially in sports, we excel. You know, we excel greatly. As a matter of fact, just like here in this country during slavery, this country profited off of us. It became the greatest nation in the world. And the same thing is going on in our sports arenas because of the black people in there. They have become a trillion-dollar industry and stuff, you know, and they prosper greatly off of us. But as soon as they get hurt or after they, you know, if you're a professional athlete, I guess you have from the day from they little boys all the way little girls all the way up the rest of their life. They train, they do everything they can, you know, to be top of the game, you know, and they put in the majority of their life to get you where they are because you have to be the best of the best. And then if you, when you reach the pinnacle, then all of a sudden if you get hurt or something else, and then they say, you know, they toss you to the side and they say next. And that's not right, you know, because if they make you a fool, at least you should share the wealth, especially if, you know, you get hurt or other things happen to you. But in any case, Brother Daniel, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, David. Okay. Thanks for having me
and,
on.
And Daniel, like I said, he's going to be a new editor before. But he has a program he'd like to share with us. And he's going to have upcoming podcast. Daniel's going to make some serious noise about some serious issues here. But right now, you just want to focus on his program that he's involved with. Go ahead, Dan, you got it.
Thanks for having me on to talk about our organization. I have concerns with our student athletes, as do so many of you and so many other individuals that participate in sports, whether it be a family member or yourselves. I have a big concern for student athletes, primarily how I came up as a student athlete. I unfortunately came from a single parent household. My father deceased when I was 4 years old, and my mother raised six children as a single parent. One of the things that she saw to get me involved in was, of course, sports. The Boys and Girls Club, YMCAs, Parks and Recreation. And it was exciting for me to participate in sports and to learn about sports, team concept, coaches, listening to their directives, following their order of what they demand from us as participants in athletics. Of course, the Boys and Club and the YMCAs have a structure of how you need to obey when you come into the facilities, how you participate, go away to play against other teams, other Boys and Girls Clubs. There's conduct that you need to display. Moving forward into high school was where I recognized the struggle academic. Academic was a big struggle for me. I didn't know at the time that I just found out a few years ago that I had battled dyslexia. It wasn't something that was diagnosed on my era. But going through school, I just remember in the third grade, a teacher asked me in the 50s. And if you know, in the 50s, we... Blacks weren't allowed to use the white bathroom. It was still segregated during that time. But there was a teacher that asked me as a third grader, Daniel, don't you think you need to stay behind because you're not doing well? Well, you know, I could have said yes, I am. Yes, and I did, not knowing. And I was kept behind, but it was never a conversation with my parents, my mother. It was just sending home a report card to keep me behind. So anyway, you know, moving forward, that stayed with me all my life. Failing the third grade, moving forward into high school, participating in wood shop, metal shop, to stay active to participate in the high school sports and winning championships. But I was frustrated because I was in woodshop, because I was in metal shop, because I was in home economics. I wasn't doing the preparation to go to school, college, preparatory. But these things bothered me mentally and emotionally. I didn't have anyone to talk to about it. I remember in my junior year, the counselor had my records. They sent me to see a counselor, and he looked at my grades and say, are you Daniel White? Yes. I don't know what I'm supposed to do with these kind of grades. What's your plan for life? I said, well, I hope to go to college. You can't go to college with these kind of grades. You know, you need to take some trigonometry, some algebra, some biology, chemistry. But he didn't even follow me as an athlete, and he asked me, did I play sports there at the college? I remember these things. I mean, at the school. Yeah, I remember these things. It affected me. Yes, I played at the school. We won the state title. I was a starting 10th grader on the varsity team, all state football and basketball. But I stayed eligible through the wood shop, metal shop, home economics. Tried to cram some academic courses in my senior year. So going to college, I said I was going to major in elementary education, trying to major in elementary education. I ran into stumbling blocks there, a small black school in Charlotte, North Carolina. Some of you may know Johnson C. Smith University. Did well down there. They had a program. I think that was when they were putting the Prop 42 and 48, I think it was, in place. I can't remember what it was, but it was a prop. So that created me to be out. So I didn't finish, but I got picked up by World Football League, who was excelling there, and then picked up in the NFL with my athletic background. So I finished. I got hurt, had to relinquish my career. And, of course, trying to raise my sons and daughters, as important as it was for academics and athletics, my wife and I tried to instill. Then I prayed, and I asked God to give me something that I can give back, that no other child had to go through what I went through. And I had a vision, a revelation, to start the National Student Athletic Society. The National Student Athletic Society is a mentoring organization to help student athletes balance academics, athletics, and social skills. That's the vision that was laid in my heart. And how do we do that? I was told in my heart that there are so many student athletes out here, that former high school student athletes that have gone through some struggles, that can be mentors to our current student athletes in junior high school and high school. If they agree to come on board with the National Student Athletic Society, we develop the program where they be trained on how to be mentors. It's not just walking out and saying I'm a mentor to a student athlete. To be a counselor, understand training, understand their needs, understand the crisis that they're in. They're going through something, and they need someone to talk to. I needed someone to talk to. I needed someone to share the crisis I was living through. Even as a good athlete, it plagued me for the rest of my life. Up to now, because of serious injury, I needed some help because I found out about some things that I'm dealing with that were still bogged up inside of me years ago. I didn't have family around that I wish I had. Just my mother to talk to, which is good. So the kids that I work with in the program moving forward now with the National Student Athletic Society, training mentors, we partner with the Bo Biden Foundation to train mentors on what it means to be a mentor to a student athlete. They have crisis. Some of them come from single parent households. Some of them come from divorced households. Some of them come from homelessness. Some of them come to play sports and don't have shoes to wear. Because now you sometimes, some schools, you got to pay to play and you have to bring your own equipment. And once they give you equipment, they're going to take it at the end of the year. I had a young man who was wearing slippers through the school, bedroom slippers. Bedroom slippers through school. And I questioned, he was my student athlete. Why are you wearing slippers? You're a student athlete. He said, Mr. White, that's all I have. And he's struggling academically. He was in the gym class because as a mentor, I follow him through their see what they're doing, sit in the classroom with them, see if they know how to take notes. And that was something that I didn't know how to do until I went back to school after my pro career. I went back to get my degree. And they taught me study skills, note-taking skills, test-taking skills, things that I was not taught in high school. How to take a note. How to take a test, how to study for tests, these type of things. You get your books, you go home, and you study. So that's the core of the program of National Student Athletic Society. And we did a program.
Let me ask you a question on that.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm sorry, you've been interrupting you. But I just want to know, because we got several other people I want to get on here.
Okay.
But let me ask you a question. In this mentoring program that you have,
mm-hmm.
What are some of the things that you need to be, you know, or how can people get involved with that?
Some of the things that we need individuals to help participate in our summer camps. We do camps throughout the schools, throughout the recreation programs that we can host camps in. Individuals willing to be trained on being mentors and take a caseload of student athletes, male or female, and work with them. And then we work through the school year two or three times a week after school programs on the expectations of a classroom and any problems they have with any activities that they're involved in. You know, we all struggle with coaches. So, you know, we work with you and how to get around coaches. So individuals get involved. We do fundraisers. We host tournaments. I design now a program for a Hall of Fame for community individuals to be inducted into the Community Hall of Fame who participate working with student athletes.
Interesting.
Yeah. So we need volunteers.
Let me say this to you, Danny, because I'm gonna share something with you right now. Brother Ricky Vaughn, are you on here? Can you talk?
Good evening, everyone. I'm sorry, Brother Murphy, your phone was.
I hope you had an opportunity, Ricky, to hear what Mr. Okay, maybe yeah, because my phone is just. This is saying that I have low connection, and so I am probably breaking up. And plus, I got two phones. I got a phone on. But can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Can y'all hear me?
Yes.
Shake your head. Okay. No, I Ricky Vaughn was it? Daniel, unfortunately, you missed him when he came to the event Saturday night. Ricky Vaughn is also one of our editors in the National Black Unity News. But Ricky Vaughn is also ran for mayor in this past election, and he's an extremely successful entrepreneur. Or, you know, restaurants, all types of stuff, you know. And he's very innovative with, you know, working with people, and he has a lot on the ball. He's an extremely busy person. But I told you that I want to introduce you to certain people that may can assist you.
Right.
And Ricky Vaughn, can you share, because I've got a couple other people that I'm going to bring on here with 1,000 Great Minds and Brother Cliff. But can you share with who you are, some of the things you do, and maybe just maybe y'all two need to change numbers so y'all can maybe do some things together for our youth?
Absolutely. Again, my apologies for jumping on late. I got to jump off in a minute. I'm at the airport and waiting for my connecting flight.
Okay.
We partner with different middle schools and high schools and community associations around the city, but not just in Baltimore, in Atlanta and Philadelphia, also other cities that we have establishments in. And really what we do is we partner with them in preparing youth for the next phase of their lives, whether it be supporting them from an education standpoint, if they're looking to go to college, if it's neighborhood associations where you have individuals that have dropped out of school and looking to go back and get their GED, if it's young men that want to go into whether it's military or become a physician or become a judge, become a teacher, whatever the case may be, we partner with different professionals and institutions to connect them so they can kind of shadow their footsteps in a way. As well as just different events in the community. We donated laptops to middle school and high school students this past, well, we've been doing it for the past 5 years, but last year we donated over 2,500 laptops to Baltimore City school students alone. So, I'm not sure what all to share. Brother David put me on the spot, but we're definitely out there in the community.
I'm gonna tell you something. No, I was just saying that's what I do. No, because I think it's a lot that I just want you to introduce you to Mr. White, because once y'all get an opportunity to change numbers and then y'all have opportunity to sit down and talk to each other, you will see how each of you can benefit each person, each one, because he could benefit you in a lot of ways, Ricky. And so I just want to, that's why I want to get that in, because like I say, on these type of shows that we do, the time runs so swiftly. So I just want to, really put y'all two together. Unfortunately, I wanted him to meet you last night, but y'all missed, each other. And, you had left before he got there. So, but in any case, I appreciate you, brother, and I appreciate you for coming out last night, Saturday night, and participating with us. And there's another gentleman on here that Mr. Michael Thomas, I believe. Can you unmute yourself, sir? And he's doing a lot of things in, I think, Rocky Mount, North Carolina. Can you very briefly, sir, introduce yourself and let people know what you do?
Yes, David, thank you for having me, and thank everyone for being so unified and bringing everything that you have. And yes, Daniel, I'm very familiar with Johnson C. Smith University here in Charlotte, North Carolina, where I'm from. And I attended that university myself for a spell. 1,000 Great Minds is the effort that I'm pushing. And I have a staunch, unconventional position on debt, and don't expect me to ever say anything to you about anything conventional that has happened in the past, because that old paradigm stuff has not worked for me. I'm 6 decades and 7 years, and so I feel what David has gone through, and I experienced that in my life. I had to go to real estate school 8 years in a row, these 30-day, 60-day sessions to get my real estate broker's license in Charlotte, North Carolina, and I took the real estate examination 8 times before I passed it. Most people take the first time and pass it. but I'm grateful to have gone through Century 21 Real Estate Academy and two other real estate institutions, because I've learned real estate and it has enabled me to put together a nationwide housing program that enables every desiring person in the country, all 3,142 counties coast to coast, to get a house and a car, truck, van, or SUV debt-free. I'm a staunch believer in no debt because we're wealthy, and I'm conscious of that. I'm aware that many of the problems that we're experiencing is because the money that we had went into rent or mortgage payments or car payments. And I'm talking about erasing rent, mortgages, and car payments. I'm talking about paradise in my mind. And I think I've been given a formula, a plan that we are able to provide this house and personal transportation to 50 million people without any rent, mortgage, car payments, or debt to pay. It's unconventional. Do not expect me to bring to you what realtors in all 3,142 counties bring to you, because they're going to bring you debt. And it is not necessary that we have that. So 1,000 great minds from all work and business profession from A to Z, bringing all skill sets, know-how, intellectual capital, and business acumen to the table, are urgently needed to help start up, launch, direct, manage, and oversee this nationwide housing program that erases the rent, erases the mortgage, erases the car payments from the people, so that they can put the money into educating our children and put a economic foundation under us that we've never had before. This is goes back 100 years, the 1900, the 1968 Fair Housing Act. We see that it's not so fair as it is, because we have homeless people, vacant houses, old and new, and people living in the street. So my staunch position that I am here to erase debt. I am here to erase it on this planet. And I think I have a good position, because most people have not. You can't get water, just essential things. So that's my position. We need the collective IQ of 1,000 great minds, given their undivided, sustained, focused, undistracted, undisturbed, full-time attention to erasing debt, full time. So when we come on the ship of 1,000 great minds, it's a full time position, but we're going to come out on top. We're going to come out wealthy, because we're not going to have this rent to pay. We're not going to have this mortgage to pay and these car payments to pay. 20% of the retail sales in the United States come from car sales and car business. So we can erase that. I'm with the paradigm paradise. The idea of just taking people out of distress, being subjected to rental eviction, mortgage foreclosure, car repossession year after year, decade after decade, a century, and we still have this problem, and no one has given their attention to it. No one given their undivided, sustained, focused, undistracted, undisturbed, full-time attention to it. So the 1,000 Great Minds is here for that reason. So we need 1,000 Great Minds. And to come on board, finally, we will collectively co-own 9 core businesses operating in all 3,142 counties. The first business that we inherit is the bank. We will have bank depositories in all 3,142 counties. We have a real estate agency unit, land development construction unit, insurance unit, environmental engineering unit, recycling, a university unit, a film production unit, temporary employment staffing unit, staffing people in all 3,144 counties, 42 counties, in addition to foreign exchange currency trading business. So these are just the 9 core businesses that came out of my mind. Now, when we unify with 1,000 great minds, we have thousands of ideas that's going to make us wealthy. That's where I am. No debt, wealth. Thank you very much, David, everyone, for allowing me
all
to
right,
give
I appreciate
that deal.
And as a matter of fact, I appreciate you for coming on. And it's good that you are on, because you know, I just shared with you what the concept of RICO number is doing. I just shared with you what Brother Daniel White is doing, helping out you with, you know, mentoring the program. I just shared with you with Mr. Thomas coming on, telling you about the 3,000, you know, minds. We all have all of these great concepts, but yet we in, you know, such dire straits in our community. And, but see, we have innovators. There's no, you know, there ain't no excuse for us. And so, but the only thing is that seems to kind of hold us back because we have great minds, like Mr. You know, Michael's has spoke about. We have brothers like Mr. White on here that's willing to work with our youth, you know, to prepare our youth. We have brothers like Ricky Vaughn who running around, to, you know, dealing with politics, dealing with financial issues, dealing with our youth issues, and just dealing with issues in general. But, you know, there's always, you know, we have just all this stuff going on. And sometimes, you know, because we are, I'm extremely busy with the media, which is another powerful industry, you know, and we have all of these things that in the national black youth is nationwide, you know, we have the tendency to turn this world upside down with this publication and not just the publication, but other forms of communication, which I don't always share on these airways. You can't let your left hand know what your right hand is doing all the time. But at the same time, but then I have a brother, and Brother Cliff, can you unmute yourself? And Brother Cliff is, he dealt with our cultural issues and for decades been trying to unite people not only in this country but all throughout the diaspora together. But he has a unique concept that I think we all should pay attention to, all of us who I just spoke about. Brother Cliff, give the concept of I like to call it just the will, but can you just give the general idea how that works?
Okay, well, first of all, thank you for inviting me to yet another of your...
Could you hear me?
Yes. Yeah, I can hear you. Are you there?
Okay.
All right, there we go.
Yes, sir.
All right. Thanks again for holding these conference calls every week. I know that takes a lot of time out of your day that you could probably be using for something else. And also want to thank you for holding the event on Saturday, where a lot of people had the opportunity to see each other in person, some for the first time. So I thought that was a very important gathering of people where at least we could eyeball each other. We could get an idea of who's kind of doing what. The next step that too often we seem to miss, though, is the actual process of building some kind of serious organization or coalition among those individuals or groups that basically come to a lot of these events and wind up doing a show and tell. A lot of times you wind up doing, you know, here's my life story, here's what I do, and then everyone just goes home and just thinks about it a little bit, and then they go on with their lives. For the most part, when we come together, there is not, in my opinion, enough of a willful process of taking a look at what each individual does, what each individual can bring to the table and say, how can we make all of these things work together? I've seen any number of organizations that have formed, whether they are global Pan-African organizations or United Front type organizations, and usually in less than a year, those united fronts have been dissolved or those organizations have started to tear themselves apart. And it seems that a lot of the times it's because we have this notion in our minds that all we have to do is get everybody in the same room together and say a few eloquent things to each other and the unity will happen. And I would hazard to say, based on the limited experience that I've had watching organizations come and go, that frankly, that's not how it's going to work for us. We have to come together with the intention of saying we are going to come together and form a true Pan-African, a true overarching strategic vision that's going to bring in all the different aspects of what we do as a people, from the financial to the cultural to the spiritual to the media to the educators to the grassroots activists on the ground to the prison activists to the revolutionary warriors and on and on and to the scientists to the business people. And too often we don't do that. And when we do come together, we either come together with a stereotyped hierarchical structure, which is why almost everybody that comes to these United Front style meetings says, I want us all to unify. But then the three words they don't say, but the three words that they really mean are, under my leadership, which means everybody is looking at it in terms of a pecking order and everybody wants to be the lead dog, or you get together with no idea at all and you wind up with a scrum. Now what Elder David Murphy was talking about is this thing here, and I just covered up the camera so that you can see the background a little bit better. The idea of that is that you take all these different types of organizations, or if you have specific organizations, all the different organizations, and instead of trying to align them in some kind of an organizational chart where somebody is subordinate to someone else or somebody's running the show, you try to create a structure that at least allows everyone to see themselves operating on a level playing field. I arrange them in a circle so that in that way there's no one organization or group that's above or below another. And the idea of the spokes is that their missions in this diagram are shown as a straight line that goes from where they are in the rim of the wheel to the center or the hub, which would be a free, self-determining, prosperous, pan-African world at peace with itself and its people. And if you draw that up in a diagram, you end up with basically a spoke wheel. The idea of the spoke wheel, of course, being is relatively lightweight. When you use that wheel, it can get you wherever you need to go. Put a couple of those wheels on your cart, and you can take it all over town if you want to. But the problem that we seem to have as a people is that even when we get together in that kind of a way, everybody wants their own vision to be ahead of everyone else's. And so as a result, we wind up doing little things like undercutting each other or denigrating each other or character assassinating each other. And you see it almost every time we are brought together, a large group of us are brought together long enough for us to truly start to interact and start to see what some of our opinions are. We start basically taking pot shots at each other. What that does is that breaks the spokes of the wheel, breaks the wheel down, and symbolically speaking, your cart is now stuck on the side of the road. We do that all the time as Black people. We're constantly cutting each other's spokes. We're constantly destroying the very thing that could move us forward. And then we get angry when the Asian community moves past us, when the LGBTQ community moves past us, when white women move past us, and now when the angry white man moves past us. We keep getting angry whenever we see other people who are not destroying their own internal unity the way we often tend to do. So one of the things that I intend to do later this summer, we've had a couple of meetings like this, but we're going to try to have a couple more meetings where we try to get different organizers and activists together in the same room with the purpose of actually determining, okay, what are going to be the ground rules of a pan-African cooperative coalition. I'm not even calling it a united front, because every time we call something a united front, we start disuniting it. I think first we have to learn how to cooperate with each other. We have to learn how to do that first and then start mapping out some real strategies so that all the things that our different organizations do can help benefit each other. It cannot be one organization's vision or one type of organization's vision. It's not just economics. If it was just economics, Black Wall Street would never have been bombed. It's not just revolution. If it were just revolution, the Black Panther Party would not have been destroyed by the FBI's COINTELPRO. So we have to, I think, get past this notion that my vision, I have the answer. We have a lot of people who are saying, I have the answer. Well, they're right and they're wrong. They have part of the answer. And then other people who say we've tried everything, we haven't. Well, actually, we have tried everything except everything. The only thing we haven't tried is all of these different strategies together at once in a coordinated strategic manner. Watch any winning basketball or football team, and you can see how different strategies, different techniques, different talents, if they are brought together in a proper way, can develop a winning team. And if they're not brought together in a proper way, you're a lottery pick every year. But at any rate, I'm going to go ahead and shut my little spiel down. I'm also going to turn off my camera because I'm chowing down on some vittles. And since I didn't bring enough for everybody, I don't want folks to get mad at me. So, but thank you again for providing this opportunity.
Yeah, that will happen. Yeah, I did this. I brought you all along here, and you know, some of you showed up. Is that, you know, we talk, and we do have great ideas. So I've been around people all my life who had great ideas, but the only thing is, we fail to have what we call a cooperation, collaboration of how we can bring our ideas together, respect our ideas from one another, and the spokes of the wheels kind of capture my attention because I do see a way that you can still have your individualism and yet be part of a major structure. And it's time, because if you look at any other group or organization in the world or other people in the world, now you can look at a government. You know, you have all types of parts of a government. Makes it work. You got to have this. We got to have brothers on the defense. We got to have brothers who deal with economics, entrepreneurship, strategists. We have to have brothers in intelligence, you know, all sorts of frontline marchers, you know, even defamation, as far as I'm concerned. You know, we need to cover it all. And, but, you know, over my 50-something years out there on the front lines, I've sat down at the table with many groups and organizations, and like Brother Cliff said, you know, egos got in the way, personalities got in the way, and my way got in the way, and all of these different ways just don't work, you know. And now that I'm a senior member of life, you know, wisdom set in, and now you go back and you look over your life and you say, these organizations, what's wrong with it? And people, even our younger people, say, why haven't we gotten our thing together? Because we are not together. And
this is not even my idea.
And I can say yes, but we do, just like on this call right now.
This is not even my idea.
People
are
here right
now. It's Mary McLeod Bethune's idea, 1935.
You're all right, from my perspective. Okay. I got you. And but the point is that, you know, I don't know how much time I have. I don't know how much time you have. But I do know we spent a lot of time doing our thing, so to speak. And I know for myself, I can't speak for nobody else. I do need my brother. I do need my sister. I do need every one of you and the things that you end up doing. Because that's like all of y'all have parts of the puzzle. And if we can just sit down and put these parts together, yes, we have a beautiful picture to come out of it, but everybody can glean from it. Everybody can, you know, glean from the table. We have Brother Leroy McKenzie on here who deal with books and, authors and things like that. We have Dr. Watkins, educator, editor, you know. She help people write books and help people, you know, teach. She's a teacher, educator. We have brother Ricky Vaughn on here. He wears a lot of hats, and he understands a lot, you know, in the business world, but he also understands a lot in the political work arena as well. We need brothers in there as well. We have to be a part of everything. And I applaud brother scientific, like he said, everything, you know, but. You know, but one thing we have to learn to do. You can do your thing, but there got to come a time and point we have to start doing our thing. If you truly say that you are raising or helping African Americans or Black people to get a house where we need to go. And you know it. You've been out here any period of time. You cannot do it by yourself. It's not effective. Then you make it eat for a while, take care of yourself for a while, but the masses of people will still be in the conditions that they're in. I could have easily went on and got a job or did my thing and looked out for myself and died that way. But, you know, I still wouldn't have helped my people. I still not wouldn't have made a great contribution for my children and my children's children. And, you know, we at a unique place in time right now. I'm going to open the calls up, you know. But we at a unique place in time right now where we can really make some change, not even from the bottom up. But the concept that I spoke about earlier, like we had the event we had that was based on the concept of how we can help each other just by giving a little bit at it, just giving a little bit. And if enough of us do it, we can bless a multitude of businesses. Then we had Brother Thomas on here talking about buying houses, cars, and all over, not just here, all over the country. You got Ricky Vaughn, who actually had businesses all over the country. You got David Murphy, who got a publishing in all these various cities all over the country and beyond. And Daniel White and them, you know, working on the organization. See, you know, we have the wisdom, the talent, and we have everything we need, really. But, you know, the main thing we need is each other. And what I'm hoping to do, hoping to start, hoping to, you know, share with you, everybody on here, just think about it. How much more a blessing we could be if we came to you and assist you to what you were doing. But would you be willing to come back and assist everybody else in what they are doing? And see, this is what this spokes of the will is capable of doing. Can you imagine what I want to do something in the publication, and I have the brothers in the street, if I say, if I put an article in the paper that Washington is planning to do Black Wall Streets all over the nation, there are organizations raising up all over the nations, but yet I don't have an economic base to you know, when they come after me, I can't withstand them by myself. You know, and just think about it. If I could come to a brother like Mr. White, and he's working with young people, and he can, I can tell him, you know, this is what's coming down the pipe, they pay for pay. And he can also prepare our young people to watch out what's going on. I can go to 1,000 great minds, but he have an army of people all over the country, but we have houses, homes, and everything, you know, that, you know, that we can protect. Then we have Ricky Vaughn, who can get into political things that they can, because the pen is mightier than the sword, they say, you know, he can get legislated up as long as he was back. You know, he had constituents, you know, powerful, not just the top ones, but people that have this kind of stuff behind them. And then when he says something, you know, they're going to listen, because he can just say with a stroke of a pen or with a phone call, have people all over this country. He got National Black Newspaper. He got 1,000 great minds. He got youth programs and all of this, all across. Just a phone call away that could tear, you know, tear this up. And see, that would get some attention. You know how power works. Don't concede. But it does understand power. And we have it. It's just that it's so scattered all over the place. And this is small pieces, but yeah, y'all need to give it some serious thought at that how we can one day just sit down and reason with one another. Just talk to one another and share. You know, you continue, nobody want to take what you're doing from you. You can still do your thing, but we have to learn. We really need to learn this real fast, how to do our thing and how to do and how to truly do it collectively. Now, we don't have that much time, so the line is open, and anybody have a thought or suggestion of how we, us, can come together from your perspective, because your thoughts could be the thought that bring us, you know, some of this us together. So if anybody wants to share some information with us, this is the time to do so. The line's open.
Yes, David, thank
everybody
you. I'd like
to speak at one time, me.
I like to just say that
go ahead.
That the
go ahead, sir.
the route that 1,000 Great Minds is on is a route to capturing a billion people. And I've been to that point. We see Google. We see Facebook. We see Microsoft. Google has a billion people at its fingertips. Facebook has a billion people at its fingertips. And I happened to run into a gentleman by the name of Dr. Bay who explained to me how we capture the planet. And it is that when we do get a billion of our people into our own platform, the black Facebook, so to speak, that we have the entire planet right in our hands, because the other 6 billion people are in the family of the 1 billion people. So I've been there. I've been to the top of the mountain, so to speak, and I see that. I see that vision where we capture control of ourselves, capture the control of our economics, put our foundation in place so that we customize solutions to the problems that we have. Brother David White has a customized solution. Other brothers have customized solutions, but we need to customize the solutions to the problems that we have. If it's a problem with child support, that type of thing, we have a customized solution to bring that, and we cannot bring it without economics. And that's why I'm so staunch on, it's not just economics, it's business. That's where I rest at. I rest at business, business planet-wide. And I'll say in conclusion about this long-time joke of the white man, the black man, and the Jew. Ask the white man what he wanted. If he wanted everything in the world, what would it be? He said he wanted all the business in the world. And ask the black man what he wanted, and he said, I want all the money in the world. And when they asked the Jew what he wanted, he said, I want that Negro's address. To me, it's about the money, you know, and about the economics and about the business, you know, before we can go anywhere, because we don't have control of the airways like Google does. We don't have control of the airways like Facebook does. We don't have control of the airways like Fortune companies do. And we have to have control of the airways just as good as QT, Exxon, and all of them. And that's where 1,000 Great Minds is going to put that floor in place, that foundation, a platform to wealth and lifelong security for every black person on the planet.
Okay, thank you, sir. All right. And so anybody else, you know, because this is a solution time. You know, like I say, over the years, we talked about many things. But you never know, you know, how God can bless a person with an idea. Like to me, you know, I think my idea is great, the national newspaper. I think it's great, you know, personally. But I do know that it has its place, and it's a place for that. It can assist in economics. It can assist in communication. It can assist in education and all of them things. You know, we have a lot of tentacles as well. But so does 1,000 Great Minds. So does what Ricky Bond does. So does what Mr. White is doing. And so my thing is still is, you know, even though we can do these things, we can complement one another. You know, but like I said, but then we have, like I said, all types of people that involve in so many different of the structures. Like you said, we're looking at scientists. We're looking at the legal services. We're looking at so many other organizations that has its place. And all I'm saying is, you know, you can have great concepts all you want to. Even the concept I was just telling you about when I opened up the airways was that even the part of giving, you know, how we can take monies and from the grassroots up support thousands of businesses. Just by sharing just a little bit. And we don't have to depend on nobody to give us anything, because we take care of our own. But, you know, again, it does still take a collective work set. And one thing I do know, now I've never been in the military, but anybody with a reasonable amount of mind can strategize and can look at what's taking place at us with us. You know, it's not all the time us all the time. You know, there's people all over this world who has systematic ways to extract from us. People come from all over the world and set up shop right in the hood because they know one thing about African Americans. We are consumers. Now, just can you imagine? Just think about it. Like Brother Daniel was saying, if we just stop taking our resources and we take in our great minds, as he mentioned, and start putting them in, working them together, can you imagine what Brother Ricky Vaughn can do when he have constituents and people supporting his restaurants all over the country, all over the world, people he can feed, how many people he can employ, how many people he can start their own franchise, you know, because he has the blueprint. How many people, you know, like I say, you know, because they, like I said, we consumers, they setting up those shops all over our community. So why not us then? And that's what Brother Ricky Vaughn is doing. And so so what I'm saying is that I think it's time that we're going to have to sit down and we're going to have to reason with one another, because it's easy the way we are right now. If a serious outbreak takes place right now, a serious outbreak, they can easily pick Daniel off. They can easily pick David Murphy off, Ricky Vaughn off, and a thousand great minds off. They can pick us off so easily because there is no coalition, no relationship. Yeah, we know one another. We do this thing together. But there is no nucleus that can sustain us or back us. Where's my military at? Where's my legal service at? Where's my great mind? Where's my intelligence to know that things are coming my way? You know, and things like this. See, right now, we are so afraid because we have no connection to no one. And so that's why I say, you know, it's good to do your thing, so to speak, but we really going to have to really start thinking about collective works. We have to really think about, am I my brother's keeper? We have to really consider these things because we come to some crucial times, you know, and we've seen some rough times, but we're accustomed to that. But one thing we are not accustomed to is sitting down and just have an open mind. Just sit down and have an open mind and say, look at that wheel right there and see your place on it. I can see me on there right now. I can already envision it. Yeah, I can do a newspaper there. But look all of the service. I got people like Ricky Vaughn over here. Got all these. Guess what can Ricky Vaughn do for David Murphy? He can advertise his businesses in my publication. What can Ricky Vaughn do for David Murphy? He did if he runs for office or something. He can put his promotion in there. What can the Thousand Great Minds do for David Murphy? They can take me into every little county that he just missed all over the country and put ads in my publication. What can Daniel do? He got all types of youth and professional sport athlete organizations all across this country that can be in there. But what can David do for you? See, I can take you. I can take Ricky Vaughn and just help make him open up more stores just by promoting an advertising. The same thing with the 1,000 Great Minds. I can bring his folks all across this country so he can get 1,000 great minds, explain to them what it does through media services. The same thing with Daniel, everybody else. You know, so we all, it's woven together, but for some kind of reason, I think, but you know, I was speaking to Brother Cliff the other day, and maybe y'all can help me out on this, because we know what divides us. We just discussed it. We don't want to, you know, everybody's doing their own thing. We don't have time for, even though we call ourselves working for us, but we don't have time for the other man's idea. Our way is the way. That's why we focus on, because that's what we believe. But then again, I'm what I call myself inspired by divine inspiration. I see all of us are blessed with great ideas, but I believe that even having this type of communication, what we're doing right now, that the small group of us right now, just a small group of us, can turn this world upside down. If we just take our place on that wheel and do our thing and how we can complement one another. Reason one, look at the minds on here. Look at the mind of Brother Cliff, Brother Daniel White, Walter Murphy. All of y'all got great ideas, great, you know, very inspiring. Can you imagine us just sitting down and be looking at stuff we doing by ourselves? Can you imagine what we could do together? Look at the people that we can bring in to fill up the other spokes of this wheel. That that if I need anything, I can go to the circle of the spokes and get what I need. If I'm being harassed, I can go in there and get my protesters out of there. If I'm being threatened, I can go in there and get them soldiers, the gangsters and the militia that we have. You know, all kinds of things. So, you know, it's we got Brother Vern, and you know who has his own TV station. You know, so we got all everything. But like I say, I think we're going to have to really consider sitting down at the table with one another and not expect everybody to do our thing, but let us do us, you know, do our thing, you know, because our individual effort, like I said, I can assist you with some of the things that you're doing, but we have to be reciprocal. Look at the wheel, how it all joined at that inner circle and branches out. It will cover everything. So that's just David Murphy thought. And, you know, we don't have a lot of time left. Matter of fact, we kind of overtime, but I still would like to hear some of y'all thoughts about us sitting down at the table. What say y'all?
David, can you hear me?
Anyone? Yes, I can.
Yeah. I'd like to just remind people that.
Go ahead, bro.
I'd like to remind people that the holiday of Kwanzaa was started by a few people, but yet it's celebrated now all over the world. And so, you know, the thing is, we just need to look at how to spend our time reinforcing one another and then share the good that we collectively bring. Because that's, you know, it's a powerful, you know, we have powerful concepts here. And the thing is how to ignite that power. So that's my thoughts on the whole subject matter.
I agree. You know, like I say, you know, I hear you, bro. Anybody else?
DJ.
Go ahead. One of y'all, just go ahead.
I'll just add.
Come on, Doc. Go ahead, Doc. Dwightis, go ahead. That's you.
No, that was.
That's Leroy. Go ahead, Leroy. Say something.
Yeah, no, man. Really.
Go, Leroy.
Just real quick, I'm just going to say this about what you were saying, David. Brother Malcolm said, we're not outnumbered, we're out-organized. The more organized we are, the more structured we are, the more power and leverage that we have. So having these kind of encounters and coming together like this, it's not just about us meeting, but about having a structure and putting in place the processes and things that we want to accomplish and how to implement them and going about and implementing them. So I'll just say that.
Thank you, brother. Can I get in there, David, real quick?
Yes, you can.
Fantastic. Hello, everyone. My name is Walter Eugene Quincy Murphy, and I'm the Managing Director of the National Black Community News. And I've been listening to you, brothers, and I am so impressed at the fact that some of you guys have so many wonderful concepts and ideas that all designed to help us. And that's what this is all about, helping our community just do and be better. If that's not the goal, then maybe I'm in the wrong meeting. But I'm hoping that if that is the goal, And every one of you guys are already doing what you're doing, and you're doing it well. And when I say you're doing it and doing it well, because you're on this call, and the most important thing I found is that what you was all saying about the idea of being organized, you can't get organized if you don't show up. And you guys are showing up. And what I'm trying to tell you guys is that just showing up to the table on something like this will allow you to get into the idea of knowing everyone is. And that's the key. It's about communications. It's about the knowing. And once you know what needs to be done, you can get it done if you have the resources to get it done. And brothers, let me tell y'all, and sisters, we already have everything. And I'm going to say this right now, and if you disagree with me, then go for it. But I'm a firm believer that we have everything that we need right here, right now. Back to you, David.
All I can say is this, that I'm impressed. Like I say, these last couple of weeks and months, whatever, you know, my eyes have been open a little bit wider, and I'm full of, how would you say, ambition, because I see it. I'm touching it almost. I can, you know, I see the people, and like I said, and it's a simple matter, but yet it's the hardest thing to do. You know, it's a stumbling block for us. You know, we all know what we need. You know, this ain't nothing new. We all know that's expected. Like Brother Cliff said, the first thing coming out of my mouth, let's unify. But you got, like he said, but you got to take that out of there. You know, because if you have to be the head man in charge, it ain't going to work that way. We all got it. I remember that. You know, I used to watch these little, when I was a little boy, and those white cavalrymen would be attacking the Indians, vice versa. So they're attacking each other. And it got so bad on the Indians, the Cherokees had to call the Apaches. The Apaches had to call the Cheyennes. And then they had this thing they used to call the Big Council. And all of these chiefs came from all over the place. And they sit around and had this little peace pipe, they used to call it. And all of these chiefs sitting around, they had a couple of braids behind them, they tried from each one of them. And they would take this pipe, take the puff off, and pass it around a circle. And they would go around the circle. Each one would take it, and each one, they would share, you know, what we're doing. But they had one thing in common. They wanted to defeat the white man. They said to each other, even though they used to fight fiercely against each other for the lands, fiercely kill each other, they say, for this cause, we have to come together. We have to lay down our weapons against each other and take our weapons and put it on them. If not, we're going to be wiped out. They're going to take our land. They're going to kill us, pretty much what happened. And that's the same thing is happening to us. They're killing us. But we won't even sit down and discuss it. We have a group over here doing this, but we won't even sit down and pass the peace pipe around, sit in this circle that Brother Cliff got wrapped around his head, that halo, so to speak, and take our place in those circles and share our information with one another. And know that we all have a place there. And like I said, just a small group of us right now. And just us. How we can build the great minds. 1,000 minds. How we can take the information that Brother Leroy has and share all the thousands of books with all that wisdom in it. And everything else I said, Brother, you quit. Brother Tom, go ahead.
Yeah, just briefly, David, I just want to share Plan 76 with the group. Plan 76 ESP, Plan 76 Economic Stabilization Plan. What that does is it, at that point in time, after working 76 part-time hours from home over 5 months, at the end of that time frame, we should have the money to capitalize each of the 1,000 great minds by first, given a $2 million stipend at the end of working 76 part-time hours from home over 5 months. This $2 million stipends is for the purpose of, number one, buying your own house and two cars and paying your homeowner association fee 2 years in advance, your property taxes insurance on your house and two cars 2 years in advance, property insurance 2 years in advance, your all your utilities, alarm system, everything 2 years in advance, $25,000 clothing allowance, $5,000 book allowance, and computer allowance to stabilize everyone so you have no rent, mortgage, or car payments to pay. On the other hand, you have the other $1 million that's set aside and given out over 5 years at $17,500 per month over 5 years. That's what's called the Plan 76 ESP. Each of us would not have any rent, mortgage, car payments, or debt to pay. Our stuff would be paid up 2 years, and we would have $17,500 income monthly set up for 60 months, 5 years, called the Economic Stabilization Plan, for us to give our undivided, sustained, focused, undistracted, undisturbed, full-time attention to turning this thing around. And I can see Black Unity News in all 3,142 counties. I can see 50 million of our home buyers distributing.
Let me ask you a question
on our directive. We have 50 million home buyers that we plan to have, and if each one of them got two papers and passed them out, we could get all your papers out in one day, because these people have to do a little work to get these houses and cars. But I'm telling you about Plan 76 that stabilized the 1,000 grade
mm-hmm.
miles, so we don't have any rent, mortgage,
mm-hmm.
car payments, or debt.
And that's what I'm talking about.
We have 5 years of income at $17,500 per month to take care of your family, but your utilities and everything paid 2 years in advance, and you have no rent, mortgage, car payments, or debt to pay. That's a plan. That's a component of the plan.
Yeah, I understand that, and that's what I'm saying, but are you willing to sit at one of those spokes?
You know, I'm here right now, David. I'm about unification, and I'm about unification.
But I was asking you, what would you be willing to sit? Okay, that's all I want to. Yes, that's what I want to hear. You know, and that's what I'm saying is, what about you, Brother Leroy? Would you be at least willing to sit down and reason together?
Absolutely. You know, I'm here, Brother David, and I mean,
can you hear me?
Down and putting plans together exactly like that is what's needed. Absolutely.
And what about you, Mr. White? Mr. Daniel White, what about you, sir? Okay, I don't know, you may have left or something. But what I'm saying is, you know, okay, you know, like I said, when we're passionate about it, we're going to do what we're going to do if we have to do it by ourselves. But all I'm saying is this. That's part of the spoke, just one part. And it's hard, like I say, in the world, to get any place else if the other spokes ain't working. And because, like I said, it would be easy, what Mr. Thomas was just saying, about all of those people putting in work. But, you know, you got to have people from all of them different segments. And we have to attack all of those issues. And because they're going to come to us with all of those other issues. If we need one gap open, it's a way for people to come in. Like I said, we need intelligence, because right now, as we speak, we're talking about these things. But you best to believe they listening to what, you know, what we plan to do to counteract it. Anything, you know, but we're at the point now where you can't fears or afraid somebody going to take what you think is rightfully yours. And if you blessed with ideas such as the ones we already have, then I think it's only right that, you know, we sit down and you bring what you have to the table. And let's work it out. And so with that being said, anybody has anything in closing, it's the time to do it. Brother Cliff, you want to share anything, you know, maybe some ideas we may have that we can put some of these things together, sir?
Well, two quick things. First of all, I know sometimes we have a tendency to embrace things depending on whose idea it actually was. And of course, now I don't think there's anybody on this call who even knows me well enough to dislike me yet. But just in case, just to be sure, the whole idea of spokes on a wheel, That's not even my idea. That is an idea that was put forward by Mary McLeod Bethune in 1935 when she founded the National Council of Negro Women. She took up to 20 black women's organizations and arranged them essentially in a spoked wheel format where, again, there was not an organizational chart, there was not a pecking order, there was none of that sort of thing. The idea that she had even then was to encourage different organizations to pretty much see each other as equals and to be able to sit together and reason together and not feel as though one had to be subordinate to the other. The other thing, reaching back into the past again, I'll just throw up my favorite quote from the Honorable Marcus Messiah Garvey. Everyone loves to say Africa for the Africans, those at home and those abroad. And everyone loves to say, up, you mighty race, you can accomplish what you will. But my favorite quote from the Honorable Marcus Messiah Garvey was, the thing to do is to get organized. Stay separated and you will be exploited, you will be robbed, you will be killed. Get organized and you compel the world to respect you. And to me, that was the Honorable Marcus Messiah Garvey's marching orders, whether you're in the UNIAACL or not, to people of African descent around the world. We're so busy concentrating on the other things that he said that we're not following his prescription.
All right, so I'm going to say this in closing. I'm going to have to get on another call right, you know, right now. It is this. Now, I'm going to start getting in touch with y'all because soon and very soon, I'm going to give you a call and we're going to have to meet somewhere. And we're going to have to sit down and at least discuss all our ideas and put some work into some of these things and get things started. Because the mind promised to none of us, man, and we can't carry this kind of stuff to our grave. You know, today, that's all we have is today. And I believe that old saying, if not us, then who? If not now, then when? And so we, you know, like I say, just give us some thoughts, gentlemen and ladies, because we got it, and it's just so heartbreaking sometimes, the way I see it sometimes. I see so much great talent out here, and everybody, that's the sad part about what's going on. All the other races all over the world knows our true power. They know if we come together, the havoc that we can call around this world. I mean, we ain't going to do what they did it up, but they will crumble because we sustain everybody. Well, because we just start sustaining ourselves. That's all we ask. We just sustain ourselves. Our nature's not like their nature. See, they self, they're going to do for them. You know, we are good people, you know, but, you know, the last shall be first and the first shall be last. We the original people. Yeah, we need to take our original space, our place, and show the world how it should be done, you know, and we can do it because, like I say, and I love what you, I love your thoughts because, you know, Mr. Thomas, 1,000 great minds, because we have some great minds, some definitely great minds. And like he said, we can bring all of these great minds and put them together. That's like a nucleus bomb, man, you know, that can explode and we can take over whatever needs to be take over and do what's right by our own and our future and our children's future. Because I can't even imagine how my people, must be my ancestors, feel when they was under such, for my obligation, so much stress from under them legally. Even though we under this pretty much the same thing, but they just do it strategically against us. But they were still able to build institutions, still had their own hospitals. You know, we did a lot of things with just us. And the roads wasn't everything else you could talk about. It was a whole bunch of them all over the place. And we invented, we did all sorts of things. You know, very creative, and we still are. It's just that they learned one thing about us. need to keep them ones who are educated, ones who can read books, who got thoughts, who can think. Yeah, they're dangerous, and they keep us apart. Yes, sir.
Just one other thing, David. I want to say that a part of the 1,000 Great Minds plan is so that we may have 2,000 eyes watching, 2,000 ears listening, 2,000 hands helping, and 1,000 great minds assessing what's going on, because we don't trust one another. So we have the checking of 2,000 eyes and 2,000 ears. You know, we should be able to check any underhanded stuff. You know, so that's the way the program is written. It's 100% above table, 100% transparency, with 2,000 eyes watching, 2,000 ears listening, 2,000 hands helping, and 1,000 great minds processing what's going on. To show, because we don't have trust with one another, and that's the reason we can't come together. But when we have 2,000 eyes watching me, mm-hmm. I'll be sure not to get out of order. You'll let me know when I get out of order. That's the one of the purposes of 1,000 Great Minds.
Well, yeah, I understand, but like I say, you know, when you're coming up with a lot of people, you've been around other people, and you know, this has been happening. All of us had dealt with people, our own people. Who have not done right by us in a lot of ways. And we are extremely cautious of one another. Yes, sir. Yes, you can.
Yeah, I'm going to go in a second. But listen, 1,000 Great
yes,
Minds,
sir.
Please put your contact information in the chat so that I can have it, or make sure that there's somewhere I can get in contact with you, sir.
Thank you, Brother Dempsey. Will do.
I appreciate it, man.
Yes, sir.
Okay, so, you know, from this point forward, I'm going to keep doing podcasts about concepts and how we as the people need to reason with one another. I'll just put it like that, reason with one another. But I think, you know, we can only do so much on these airways, but I'm really thinking that some kind of way we're going to have to sit down and have a powwow that, like them peace used to do, and pass that peace pipe around, take our egos out the way, and have a collective voice to say, let's really, we are not the enemy to each other. I mean, if you really look at it, you know, the enemy out there, that's what's killing us in this day. You know, we have to stop that foolishness, you know, because they taking your land, the Cherokees, they taking my land too, you know. They doing that to my children too. The Apaches say, yep, same thing over here. And we know the same thing happening in Baltimore, happening in Chicago. And Africa and the islands, every place else, the same issues. And so, you know, that's what they're doing. And so we have to recognize that and say, now, here I'm sitting up there looking at you scared you're going to go in my pocket. And these people got me all up, got my pockets. You know what I mean? And so, you know, little things that, you know, and that's why I said, I was telling Brother Cliff in closing, gentlemen, is this, you know, we have great minds. But I think, you know, we need an analyst. We need somebody. We need some of them brothers who are, what do they call them, psychiatrists. We need a, you know, our mindset needs to change. We've been taught to think a lot of different ways, you know, especially against each other. I think we need some spiritualists because we need to look outside of ourselves, that, you know, something's greater than us. And I also think we need mediators, people who know how to mediate. To sit down and say, you know, so that you can control sometimes, because you know, sometimes we got strong, opinionated people. You know, we sometimes want to be forceful about getting our point across, but a great mediator can kind of keep it in check. You know, you still get your point out, but doing it in a way that, you know, it's not threatening or people feel threatened, you know, and stuff like that. You know, that's just my thoughts. You know, I'm only one person, but I do know this, some of the basic inner thing that we need to have at our table when we do come together, so that we can have a calm, serene conversation, but a serious conversation. Because I don't know about you, or how y'all feel or how y'all think, but I do know that this is real crucial time. And if we, I'm talking about us, just that us in here and everybody else out there who say they're conscious about wanting to do something. If we don't do this thing now and we had lived through it. The next generation are behind us, you know, I don't think they fully realize, you know, they don't have all the parts of the puzzle. And I can't know about the, how y'all came up, but I had the opportunity to sit at my grandmother's feet. I had the opportunity when I was a little boy to meet my great-great-great-grandfather. Was 100 years old, laying in the bed. And you know, that many generations. And to listen to my grandmother and her brother and sister talk about their lifestyle when they was coming up and the stuff they had to do and protect. I've always been around elder people who told me their stories, the stuff that they endured. And the stuff we go through, it's rough, but nowhere near the type of threatening thing that they had to endure. And we know this because we came up under them. And we've seen the difference between now and then because we've seen a time when we did have some source of respect. That we respected elders. We respected our community. We kept our communities clean. We shared with one another. You know, that was just a normal thing to do with. If I came to your house, I ate. That's all it's to it. And if they know that you had some rag clothes on, I don't care if you were a neighbor or somebody, somebody's going to donate something to you and give it to you. If you had less, you know. And that's the way we came up, those of you of age. But now it's every man for himself. They even got the music, me, myself, and I, and our women are bitches, and, you know, just everything. You know, just that's the mindset because that's what's been taught. And if we die with the wisdom that we have, I don't know. Then it might be, you know, I don't know. But
That's not wisdom.
Yet we still around that we can do something.
That is not wisdom.
If it's just us.
David, I'd just like to say, this is Daniel. Thanks for having me. But I'd like to say as soon as we can get together with that meeting to do that pipe, as soon as we can get together, because I heard some interesting stuff on here that I'm excited about, and you know what I'm talking about, but we're live. I just want us to get together as soon as possible so I can share these thoughts.
Okay. All right. Yeah, because like I said, it is vital because the Lord's not promised to none of
us. That's right.
And I have seen, now this is what that's what I'm really concerned about because I'm going to say this and I'm going to just shut it right up. I'm going to just tell you, and this is a true fact. I came up with people, and most of my friends, I mean closest friends, the people I used to drink with and everything else, all of them, was, I mean it's strange, but all of them were 10 years older than me. They was all in that 10-year bracket older than me. And I had only a few friends that was actually in my age bracket. And I am the last man standing. Mm-hmm. And there was a bunch of them. And so, you know, the reality is setting in that, you know, life don't last long. Especially for a black man. And a lot of them had great ideas and some of them was real things a lot of them had in common. They never went after their dreams. You know, they settled. They accept life the way it was, just the way it was handed to them, and they gave up the fight. They just gave up the fight, and I hate to see that. That's why I'm like the way I am now, because I ain't giving up and I ain't giving in. I can't sit there. I love my grandchildren. I love my people. I love y'all. And we know, because if your eyes, like my brother said all the time, if your mind's been expanded, it never go back to its original form. And if we know these things and we know what's going on to us and we do nothing about it, that's a sin within itself. And if we know we need to sit down and reason with one another, I got this piece and you got that piece, and we know that we can complement one another. We know it. There ain't no doubt in our mind. It's just that we like boxers or fighters. We're in our corners, you know. You know, we fighting, so we in our own little corners and afraid to come out there, like I said, like the Indians used to do, and sit down in that circus, smoke that peace pipe, and let's reason together and fight that good fight, the fight that's going to benefit us all. And Golden Jim, I appreciate y'all taking time coming on here with me. And, you know, and so just give it some thought. And I appreciate all of y'all because y'all are fighters, man. Y'all are winners, and we can do better. We know how to do better. The only thing we have to do is to start doing better. And I appreciate you, Cliff, Brother Thomas, Leroy, Mr. Walter Murphy, Mr. White, Brother Satavi, Brother Rico. And remember this, too. While we where we are, this concept of giving, I'm going to tell you how it benefited me so greatly. So great. It's a great concept. And I'm able to fight another day, but a little better, a little more secure. And when I was talking about, you know, mentally, you'd be surprised what little things like that can do for your mentality. When you know that you take care of some of your basics, when you know that maybe you can even help somebody else. And maybe you know that the work that you've done for all of your life and all of these years, like Brother Clifford, for instance, you know, he's been out here doing this thing for years, you know, and then putting the Kuwama, you know, report together. He's been doing all this for years. It ain't nothing new to him. You know, he's been writing and talking about this for years. But wouldn't it be nice that it actually come to fruition, to see, you know, that you can actually see it in your lifetime, that, you know, that we actually got some group of small group of people together and start plugging at these spokes around your head there with some serious people talking about doing serious great and get our egos out the way, how powerful. Like you said, you can sit, you can call on at night, man, and just wake up in the morning, man, full of inspiration because you know you're accomplished something. You know it's finally coming together. And that's what I'm seeing there. That's what I'm feeling there. And that's why I say we have to, if by any means necessary, sit our tails down, man, and reason with one another. Because that's all we got is each other. We ain't got nothing else.
Well, on the subject,
we already know those straight. Nobody come back to do anything for us. Nobody.
On the subject of tomorrow being promised, not being promised, all I have to say on that note is, I hope tomorrow's promised because tomorrow's my wife's birthday. And so if tomorrow doesn't come, she's going to be very upset with me. The other thing, of course,
you will be too. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And you talk about by any means necessary. It reminds me of the fact that Malcolm and Martin were on a collision course. They had started actually talking to each other. They had earlier been very critical of each other, but then they actually started meeting and talking with each other. They started being willing to pose for pictures with each other, smiling, shaking hands. I got a picture of them here on the wall in my office. And imagine what would have happened if Malcolm had lived. See, they had to get rid of Malcolm first. Because I knew if they got rid of Martin, then all the folks who were ready to pick up a gun and defend ourselves would have gone, fuck, wow. So they had to get rid of Malcolm first. But imagine what would have happened if Malcolm and then Dr. King had lived long enough to finally come together and to solidify that meeting with each other. Or if there had been something along the lines of one night in Miami. I mean, I believe I don't think it was quite a fictionalized account, but if we had more meetings among brothers and sisters like that, where they could actually start to hash out some philosophy, hash out some ideas and some strategies and start coming up with some really concrete ideas, then a whole lot of things would have been accomplished by now. And we don't really have much of an excuse because Black Wall Street, the Black Panthers, all that sort of thing, they did all those things in the midst of lynchings. They did all those things in the midst of the Red Summer of 1919. You had between 40 and 50 separate cases of white terrorism visited upon people of African descent across the United States, and our ancestors persevered through all that. With us, if our Wi-Fi goes down, we're ready to have a fit.
Just want to say, David Parker.
That's why I said we have to change that mindset.
Just want to say that the reason that we are on this call today, I believe, is because of the Murphys. I believe we are on this call because of the Murphys holding this call together for so long. It had to be a family to hold this call together for so long. It's not because of me or anyone else that I can tell, but it's the family, the Murphy family, that has sustained getting people onto a call without fading away and fading out when somebody come on the call. There's no one there, not Malcolm X and Martin Luther King, but the Murphy family right now, right here, right now. If not us, who? If not,
well,
here,
I appreciate that, but I'm gonna tell you something. Yes, I'm gonna tell you something else, because if it wasn't for people like you, Robert Cliff, Daniel, and Leroy, Brother Satari, and Rico, and them, man, like I said, I had an opportunity. That's why I say things like that. People may think I'm in the church and stuff, but I'm serious. I say I'm one blessed man, because, you know, I get opportunity to talk to people like y'all. Listen to you. We talk, and y'all tell me. Y'all say, this is what I do, and this, that, man. I get all that stuff, and I get it from him, get it from this person. I get all of this stuff just floating, good stuff, you know, and it just lifts me up. That's why I consider myself a servant of servants, because y'all the servants. I'm just here to serve you, and I believe that. But at the same time, y'all broaden my horizon, so to speak, and that's why I know that we can do this. No doubt in my mind. Just little simple things that you said to move out the way. Our little egos and stop getting in our little corners and stuff. And, you know, we have to do that because of our society, you know, the way our society is. But if we, just a few of us, it's a done deal. Go ahead, Leroy.
Really quick, because I know I got to go too.
Yeah,
but to piggyback off of what Brother Cliff said, the interesting thing about Dr. King and Brother Malcolm is they both started at the opposite end of the spectrum, but towards the end of their lives, Malcolm moved more towards what Dr. King was understanding and saw, and Dr. King moved more towards what Malcolm saw, and it would have been a beautiful thing had they come together earlier in their living and what they were planning, because they had the same agenda. They had the same mission, but it was just a different way of approaching and getting to it. And I say you need both of them. It's not one or the other. It was both and. Because sometimes I tell people, it's like, we've done it, Matt. We've done it, Martin. We've done it Dr. King's way. Now it's time to say, hey, we need to infuse some of what Malcolm was talking about into getting things done that we need to get done. So you need both of them, because you always need that strong arm. What I call from the Bible, you always need a Peter in the house with you to handle some business sometimes.
That's right. Hey, I mean, yeah, you need a brother to pick up that weapon. And that's right. One of them spokes up there is what you got up there. One of them spokes, you got to have them in there. You know, we got to have that kind of protection, you know. And because, like I say, look what happened to Wall Street. They didn't have an army there to help protect them, you know.
Well, they did, but it wasn't strong enough. And that's
you know,
problem.
But like I say, but again,
yeah,
we got to go,
too
y'all.
Many. Yeah, they were
outnumbered.
Yeah, I got
to go, too.
Yeah.
I just want to pick you back up on
yeah, but we'll be on there next week, and we're going to continue this because – go ahead, Mr. Murphy.
No, I was just saying that what you guys are absolutely saying is correct. And if those two individuals had got their mind and their spirits together publicly and they live long enough, it would have been a whole different paradigm for all of us. I totally believe that. But what he was talking about is the idea of nation building. And the idea is that you got to have economics, you got to have, you know, all sorts of things, agriculture, but you also have to have an army. And I'm not trying to say that you got to go have an armed insurrection against white folks, something like that. That's not what I'm talking about. What I'm saying is that you got to be able to protect yourself, and if something does come down, you got to be able to fight back with as much force as necessary. Back to you, David.
Right. You got to be able to administer justice as well. you know, like you said, some people got to get got every once in a while.
And if you watch The Godfather,
a lot of that stuff will stop.
Yeah.
And if you know, a lot of that stuff will stop if they know, a police officer know that if he don't get it, if he know that we gonna come after him. If the system don't do right by us, he gonna get got. They'll stop that fool. I'm gonna tell you. But in any case, y'all, I gotta go. You know, but it's good. But you know, if it is to be, it's up to me, right? And so you know, so it's up to us. It ain't no excuse. No more excuses. We don't have any excuse. It's none in the world. If me and Mr. Thomas can't come and sit down and brothers and talk, something is wrong with that.
Let me know when and where.
We
got
to go to listen to each
Let
other.
Let me know
how,
when and where.
Well, it's already stuck.
I'm already
matter of fact,
there.
We're going to do it. I know I'm there, too. That's what I'm saying. I'm there with all of y'all. And we just have to sit down. And like I say, you know, there's some things that we're going to have to adjust in our lives, you know, and something we have to tweak, and let's do it. But, you know, now we're working for, like I say, that cause that we all about. Could be all about black helping us. We're all of us about that. And why can't we be about it then? You know, but again, we have to leave, like I say, some things we have to, even me. You know, I have to learn. I have to sit down and learn, but I do know that it ain't going to happen. The National Black Youth News can't go, it won't, you know, much as I love it, it ain't going to do it by itself. Much as I love the concept of giving that we started, we ain't going to get it up with that just alone. It's a great help. The Thousand Great Minds is a great project. We can get it. What Daniel's doing is a great project. You know, but, you know, he can't, it all in, you know, working with the youth and stuff. But it takes all of us. That's why I say that. Well, every little thing in there, doctors, lawyers, everything need to come to that table once we get it up. But before they come, if they see just what we are doing, putting it together and committed to it, they'll come.
Yeah.
Build it, like they said, they'll come. The right ones will come. The bad ones will come too. But you know, like that, I like Mr. Thomas say, you know, 1,000 miles watching, people looking, then we know how to weed them out. That's why we need the intelligence people in there. You know, to weed them out. Well, this brother, you know, this, that, you know. And so we have to be stronger somehow, you know. And but like I say, we know that the government going to get involved and stuff, because a lot of people don't want to see us. It's like they didn't want to see them chiefs coming together. That was their biggest fear when they did that. And that was, to be honest with you, that was some real stuff when them chiefs got together. Real. They put down this weapon. I mean, they used to kill each other on sight. Mortal enemies, because their lands crossed each other. But when the white man took their land, took their women, took it, everything, took their corn, grain, and everything else. They put them, no, we had to sit down in this circle. We got to do something. And we in the same boat. Oh, they took everything from us. Then they even taking out, they took our future too. They taking the future. If we of us on their net don't do anything, if they knock us out, if they knock out, generate the baby boomers out, and those of us of this generation, that's it for us. I don't see how it can come. They're going to have to conform, you know, to the rest of this stuff. Because we did see a glimpse of things. We did see a different movement than our younger people seen. We seen what they did to us. We seen what they did to our parents and our grandparents. See, all our children going by, it's like a movie to them. But that was, we weren't that far removed from it. You know, and we seen, you know, our grandmother sit us on our laps and told us about it. They lived it. We still go down North and South Carolina. They were sharecroppers and stuff, you know. Worked hard for the for them people and got crumbs from it. We know about the time we was promised stuff, you know, and never got it. Here right now, after all that misery, then we still talking about reparations, prep, you know, and everything, waiting for them to give us something, which rightfully is ours. But look, look, after all, you think they, you know, after all these years, and you know, so like I say, they, you know, it's good if it happens, but again, but it, the only way it's going to come, we put this circle together and we demand it. And we have the power to demand, because we'll shut it down if we don't get it. That's how powerful we can be. If we took a thousand great minds and we have all this stuff, they got, they're going to have no choice. We don't have to use weapons. The pen sometimes is mightier than a sword to God. He gave it to us, everything. We can do a lot of stuff strategic. We hurt where it hurts the most. Yes, sir.
David, I'd like to add to what you're saying there by taking something that I got from an honorable doctor who said that there are the known knowns, there are the known unknowns, and there's the unknown unknowns. And so the unknown unknowns give us protection because we only know less than 1% of what we need to do to carry out anything. And I asked my one of the great minds, what do you think about that? We only know less than 1% of what we need to know to execute this 1,000 great minds and how it more programmed. And what do you think about that? He said, well, Mr. Mike, we get that portion out of the unknown that we need. We don't know what's coming out of the unknown. There right. may be a fight coming against us, but there's something in the unknown that can erase it in a flash, and that's where I am. I don't think we have to do much that the Most High see good. And that since we are with the Most High, we are the most good because we are with the Most High. And we are most good because we're with the Most High. And I don't think that we're going to have to deal with what the planet has been dealing with because we are the Moses of the United States right here in the United States. We're not in Egypt. This is a whole group of people, Moses, right here in the United States.
That's right. There you go.
And we're going to tell Pharaoh.
Oh.
Pharaoh, this is what the command from the Most High
That's
says.
Right.
We not
right,
demanding right. anything. We commanding it.
That's right.
What the Most High said, and we are under the power of the Most High.
And
I'm
not,
sorry.
You're going to get some serious plan.
I don't know what's
going
to happen to you. I don't know what's going to happen to you because you're going to erase.
Amen. Amen, brother.
You're going to erase.
Gonna
I don't know what's going to happen, but you're going to erase. You're going to move out the Most High's way,
That's
and we are nothing. We're just bringing the message.
Right, and like I say, do out of love, we can do a lot of ways, but you know, but like I say, but we ain't gonna do nothing till we come together and sit in that circle, man. And I love the thought because when like minds begin to open up, and when we can really sit down and reason with one another, I was talking to Clifton just the other night when he was very wrapped up, and you were talking about doing that town hall meeting. I seen your past. Passion, because you're getting very passionate about it. And at the same time, you're getting very fed up because you keep having meetings like this with no results and stuff. But see, but like I say, one thing that I do, I do strategize, you know, because y'all teach me things. You know, y'all teach me a lot, you know, how to do certain things. And some things are pointless sometimes. But like I say, I learned, you know, to deal with human nature on its own thing, to do get what I need sometimes. But like I say, like my man keeps saying, a thousand great minds. Can you imagine with my little teeny mind? And I can get some things done with my little mind. Can you look what Chris can do with his little mind and your little mind? But then he put them together. A thousand great minds come together, backing each other. Man, it's a wonderful thought. But it's new, and guess what? It seems like, and I believe, out of Baltimore, out of North Carolina, out of South Carolina, there's brothers and sisters all over this country, all over the throughout the diaspora, are waiting for some of us to do just what we're talking about doing. You sit down and put the circle together. They waiting. Can't wait to get on board to see something for real this time. Not theories and stuff, you know, not my way this way, but a real brothers and sisters that's so strong together that the bond can't be broken, and we getting things done. We sharing information, and they be wanting to get in this thing. Next thing you know, it's done. It's snowball effect there. And they can see the prosperity. They can see all the things that can and will be done. They can see that we can educate our own. Can you imagine? I always had this thought, open up entrepreneur school, trade schools, teaching our children about the real lessons of life, how to survive, how to start your own thing, do your own thing. And this is not, like I said, Cliff, this is in my in that thought, it was nothing new. Because I went to a school called 452, a trade school. We had black instructors, black men. And they were educated, but they were hood men too. They were street knowledge. I mean, I could tell them, the group was, you know, they were down and stuff, you know. And you know, when they would close the doors on you, they'd jack you up if they had to from time to time. But they would sit down, man up on you, too. Come here, boy. You know, they ain't take no junk either. You know, they come up, man, you know, if you want to live in this life, man, they were strong brothers, man. And they'd take that paddle, wear your ass out, too. You know, but I'm just saying, but they did it out of love. You can tell. They went in there just to make some money. Them brothers, they would spend time with you after school. Food and whatever they do, and they learn their trade. And I can imagine. I used to watch them. To go home in life, and then, you know, 10 years later, Johnny got a truck down there, electrical service, and Pete, Nate's looking at this stuff. I know my home teacher was Mr. Pinckney. He taught barbering. And years later, I seen him. And he's older. He was almost in his 80s. But he had about 50 barbershops around the city for his students. Now, can you see a man like him, how proud he could be? He could just ride over time and see his students work all over the place. And I'm going to tell you this in closing. I did a newspaper called The Informer years ago. And I started doing, this is where I learned the theory at. I started doing stories on these individuals because I thought people in the neighborhood need to know about them. So I wanted to write an article on them. But when I came back, I did the article at the time went around, and I used to go back and deliver my papers. The next thing you know, up on the wall, the article that I wrote on them, they had it and what's it called, frames and stuff. They were so proud of it, and so was I. Now I'm going to this business to see my stuff sitting up there. You know, they were just stuff that I wrote, and I'm not even right, but yet they were so proud of the things that I did. And I, Mr. Pinckney, when I seen him, and just hearing him talking about how many, you know, barbers that, you know, that his offspring, and as the elder, the look in his eyes, like his job was so well done. He was so at peace, and his life was so worth living. Man, and to me personally, he was the one that kind of motivates me. That's why I do some things, you know, because I love, you know, I pour myself out on people because I want to live like he did. I'm going to sit back one day, and I do it. I can do it now too. To a certain extent, there's some people that I pour a little bit of time into, and just like the other night, there were some people that poured some time in me. And I saw them at their place the other day. I saw Charlie Doug and Reverend Ray sitting there, you know. And they did. Back in the day, I was nervous as hell. You know, but them brothers pulled me up and, come here, man, I got you. You know, introduced me, took me around. And they don't even know the impact that they have on me. I told them, but, you know, I don't think they would never believe how much of an impact that they had. And you never know because of what y'all do, the impact that they had. Even like I said in the paper. We write, we don't know the impact we have on people. But Cliff, a lot of people, and I know, you know, I get frustrated sometimes because you're trying to pull us together all for years. But I can guarantee you this, and I know you know this. some of the brothers who think they are knowledgeable about this, knowledgeable about that, they think, you know, they're doing your concepts. But even though they'll tell you no, nay, no, we ain't going to go that way. But they following your concepts right there. And the same thing with me. When I doing this, when I came out there, little old raggedy, they never went to journalists at school. Never something did that. But when I start doing the Informer, raggedy as it was, guess who had my stuff in their paper? The Afro and the Baltimore Times took my stuff. But I took it as a badge or as a compliment. They big boys, you know, been around for 100 years and stuff. Why in the hell would they glean from a little raggedy person like me? I must have something going on. And so, you know, I'm just saying to y'all, man, you know, we got it going on. It just that we need to get it on. You know, we just, like I say, just sitting in a circle and just talk. And like you say, like Brother Thomas said, God got us, man. And we the type of people, man, just like Moses and Pharaoh, man, we have turned this whole world upside down. I'm serious. And I know we can. They know. See, the power is that they know it. We the only people that don't know it. Everybody know. Agents know. Remember I told you the story, Cliff, that the agents called me in and want me to do a black directory? And I asked them one question. I say, why do you want me, a black man? And y'all all in there. All of them was Asian. They had, because they had an agent, it was an Asian association. But these guys are from Pakistan and stuff, you know. And I asked them why. He said to me, he said, first of all, he said, y'all the only minority group in the country, in this country, that got it together. He said, black people are more together than any groups of people around the world. He said, we Asians, we don't get along. He said, Japan, Japanese don't get along with the Chinese. The Vietnamese don't get along with the Koreans. And none of them, they more splintered than everything. They deal with their own. They don't cross there to do business with each other. They can't stand each other too, you know. They don't deal with one another, but they say, you black people, y'all the only ones. Pakistan and everybody else, they it is in the same boat. He said, we are the ones, and we are the ones who had always opened the door. We the ones opened the door to all of them. The women and everything else, the black people. And they know that. We the ones got bitten by the dog, so they had these certain type of rights that they get the benefits of. They get it more than we do. But at the same time, but they beholden to us, but yet they despise us. The only reason why they despise us because they can't understand, and the whole world really can't understand. They can't. They don't know that we under so much pressure from outside and within, while we can't get it together. They can't figure that out. It's just hard for them to even comprehend why we in this country. The ghetto of the ghettos, they can go in there and make a fortune out of it. We've been here all our lives, and they don't know why we can't glean from our own tape. They just can't fit. You know, is this, you know, and I can understand from that the way they approach it, but, you know, I can understand that. But they don't understand the psychological suffering that we did from slavery and how every man had to fend for himself, me, myself, and I. The crab in the back syndrome, the Willie Lynch thing, and the Phil and the House Negro and all of this stuff that we had there, the light against the black, you know, that infused in us, you know. See, all of that stuff, psychological. That's why I say when we get in these circles, we're going to need some mental health. Because a lot of that stuff has long-term damages on us. Because the stuff that happened to me in my young age had long-term. I identify with all this stuff because I live it. Little things that can happen to a person that can mess their whole life up. And so, you know, so with that being said, then I really have to go, you know, but I appreciate you all. And, but, you know, we got it. Just have to do it. All right, y'all take care.
Thanks, Dave.
Thanks, Dave.
All right,
just
thanks,
do
just
it.
Thank you.
All right, good night, everyone.
Just do it. That's all. Just do it.
Let's do it.
Take care.
Let's do it.
Goodbye.